there. Welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at Sauce Group. Sierra LaGuardia, buying wonderful sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Mike, founder of Upvoty and fairly recently, Copy Paste Lab. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Anna. Was about time, right, that I joined your show.
I know. We've been planning this for a while.
Forever, yeah.
But yeah, really glad that you're here. And, you know, before we go into Upvoty and Copy Paste Lab, there was also Windy, as far as I remember, like the very, very first thing that you built. And I think that's also why I got to know you in the first place, because there was this story about reaching $1 million in ARR with a very, very lean team. There were just five of you. Anyway, you're probably the best to talk about this. So let's start with your background.
Yeah, so my background, if we go all the way back, I was a high school dropout at, I believe, 16 or 17 years old. And at the time, I was printing t-shirts, actually. So I had my first e-commerce shop in the garage of my parents. And I was learning how to do online marketing. And I had pretty much success with selling t-shirts online at some point. And companies were asking me to actually do online marketing for them. So I started my first agency. That's really my first business, actually. But at one point, we had success for my clients, which was great. But I wanted to move to my own product and have success for my own product, right? And so that was when the idea for Vindi came along. And Vindi was a marketplace. So we did online marketing to generate leads online. And we sold them to local contractors. So basically a marketplace. And we slowly transitioned it into a software product. So people were actually paying us a monthly fee. So I got my first MRR because of that. And to be listed on our site, we had some ads running. And still lead generation was the core, you know, product. But we slowly transitioned into software. And yeah, I grew that team to over five people and eventually to $1 million in ARR, which was great. You know, the product was great. The team was great. We had a lovely office. Everything was great from the outside. But at some point, I was driving to the office with an unfulfilled feeling. And I just didn't know what to do because business was growing. Team was great. But that was my first and most important lesson in my entrepreneurial journey, that you have to be passionate about the problems you're solving. And I wasn't passionate about the construction market and the problems we were solving for our customers, right? And luckily, around that time, because of scale, we needed a tool to collect and manage feedback for those users, you know, by scaling the software product. And I was looking online to find a tool that could help us. I couldn't really find one that fit our needs or was, you know, price-wise was really good for us. And so that sparked the idea for Upvoty. We built it internally, a very small tool to help us out. And soon I was like, I have to market this and I want to do more of this because that's the thing I'm passionate about, to help other founders, product-focused people to help better products online. And from the very first moment, I was very passionate about building that one. So I scaled the marketplace back, and eventually I sold the marketplace, Vindi, which was great because it kickstarted and funded, of course, the start of Upvoty. And yeah, that was basically when I really go all in and went all in on building Upvoty.
Okay. So do you think you had this like urge to become an entrepreneur from a very young age? Because, you know, I think at some point, this whole idea of like dropping out of school, dropping out of college became very big on the internet. And everyone was like, okay, well, we don't need like, you know, traditional kind of trajectory with the education anymore. So do you tell your, you know, friends with kids, stop thinking about university, you can just become an entrepreneur? Or what's your take on this?
Well, it depends on what you're passionate about. If you want to become a doctor, you definitely have to go to school, university, etc. But if you have that itch, what I had at a very young age, to become an entrepreneur or have a passion that you you just want to pursue, right? The money comes later, but you just want to pursue your own dreams and passion. Definitely you can explore something like that. But I wouldn't encourage to leave school necessarily, but I just wasn't made for school. And I think if I look around in my network of entrepreneurs, most of them have the same itch and weren't just made for school. They wanted to do their own thing. And if you notice that, that's a sign to pursue your entrepreneurial dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, I'm a mom. So yeah. The other day, the school always sends us photos from classes. And the other day they sent these photos and I see that on the screen, they use a screen, not the regular whiteboard. They have ChatGPT. And my partner says, well, your son is going to start working at like 12 with this pace. And I'm like, yeah, no. I think we'll still go like school, university. I would still like that. And we had a bit of a conversation on why I still think that traditional education is a good way to go. But it's just so interesting that, you know, to hear from somebody who did that apparently is pretty happy.
Yeah. And also in this day and age with AI, especially, it's so easy for those kids to have something as a side hustle, right? I see kids making money on TikTok or YouTube or building apps with vibe coding with apps with AI. But still school is the basis and gives you the values that later on in life are very valuable. So yeah. I think it's still a good thing.
Cool. All right. Well, sorry, we went a little bit off course. But yeah, so tell me a little bit more about this transition because, okay, agency to SaaS, I've heard the story multiple times here and every story is very different. So did you establish Upvoty as a product right away or was it kind of an addition to the agency? How did it work and what did you use to validate it?
Yeah, so we started using internally like a very scrappy tool for the marketplace actually. So we were growing with customers and we ourselves needed a tool. But when we started using it, we noticed how efficient it was to collect and manage feedback and how it evolved and made our product better. But then one thing I learned from the agency, but also from launching and scaling Vindi, my first software product, is that it's not necessary because you have this need that the market also has that need and demand. So it was very, very important for us to go out there and see if this idea we had was really something that the market would want as well. And in what form? Because we have a way to collect and manage feedback, but if you launch a product based on exactly your framework, you're going to fail. You need some sort of layer of customization of broader features that are usable by a broader group of audiences, right? So for example, we were a small team, but if you launch a product in the user feedback space, you want to have features that are usable by bigger teams as well. Otherwise, you can't go after the bigger enterprises or in general, you can't pursue any customer in your target audience if you have a small product that just works for you, right? So we had to go out there. And the way we did it was we just shipped a landing page with a sign-up form and a little video that one of our employees that was working at Vindi, the marketplace, created. Very simple back then. And we just shipped it out into the world. You know, I shared it in my own network. I shared it on Facebook groups, on Reddit, just basically where our target audience was active. And in a couple of weeks, we had like over 500 signups. And that was a real sign to start building an actual product that we could market. And that really kickstarted also my decision to leave Vindi Marketplace to sell it and to pursue my dream to a product that I was really passionate about, which was Upvoty.
Do you think it would this approach would still work now?
You mean like shipping a landing page and just validation? Yeah. 100%. But I would add the real validation, as we learned, comes from paying customers. So if you're able to add a buy button on your landing page, which you can just A/B test, for example, or just ship it first with a sign up form and then send an email and ask people to sign up and pay in exchange for a discount, that is an even better validation, in my opinion. But definitely, before we wrote one line of code for the eventual product that we shipped into the market, we just validated with a landing page and a sign-up form.
All right. So my very favorite question of all time is, how many of those signups converted into paying customers?
Oh, I can't remember the exact number, but it was definitely like around 25 or 30%, because we really honed in on the target audience. We really were able to find them. But one funny story, one of those 500 customers is still a customer today. And that is what is super amazing about this story, I think.
Okay. And how long did it take from launching the page to giving them something to work with?
So we started building very quickly. And I think within 3 or 4 months, we had a very scrappy landing page. So the other day, last week, there was someone who actually shared a screenshot of the first Upvoty version on X. It was really funny. He tagged me in it and it just looked so, so ugly. But that's a good thing, right? But we slowly started onboarding the first signups, beta signups. And together, eventually, we build the product that we shipped into the world. But fun fact, because we onboarded those beta users, we really could talk to them, uncover their needs and problems, and build a good enough product to actually ship into the world later on. And we had some limits during that beta period. So I guess we were in beta like 6 months. But a couple of customers actually decided to upgrade, either to support us or because of their limits, because they had a limit, like, for example, tracked users limit, how many users they could onboard from their customers, etc. And they hit a limit and they just upgraded to have the paying product version of Upvoty in the beta period. And we acquired our first $1,000 in MRR during that period before we launched publicly.
That's very interesting. And I'm asking because, you know, there is also this dilemma that I think a lot of new founders are facing. And I was also thinking about this because I was building a tiny thing myself, and I was building it with a partner. And I always said, you know what, we just need to validate it. It already kind of works. It's scrappy, but you get the idea. You get the idea how the end product is going to look like and what kind of opportunities is going to give to you. And he was always on the other side of the spectrum, saying that, okay, no, because these days people are so spoiled with amazing, incredible products that look good, that work good, that if you are shipping something on stilts, no, like, you're just going to ruin your reputation, and no matter how good the promise is, nobody's going to come back. So what's your take on this? That's why I asked if you think it's possible to now kind of go out with an MVP.
Well, it's getting easier to ship a beautiful MVP nowadays. So that's one. Two, yeah, there's some truth to it. We are spoiled with beautiful software products. And I don't think if we shipped the product that looked that ugly back then, nowadays we would have succeeded. But again, I do think you can launch a validation. So like a landing page with a sign up form or a buy button. And if you make the visuals very beautifully, like the eventual product will be, it will work for sure. I see it all the time around me. But yeah, again, with AI and the speed we have nowadays, we can beautifully ramp up some MVPs very quickly. And so it's not necessarily needed anymore to ship an ugly product. But I would say, let's shift away from being ugly or whatever. I think it's more important to ship maybe something beautifully, but small and lean. So solve one particular problem very well. So in my case, in Upvoty, we did the same thing, actually. So we just made it very easy to have a public forum to collect feedback. That's it. We didn't have any features around it, no roadmap, no changelog, no connections between all of them, no tags, no advanced features. And that is, for a lot of customers, enough to sign up, try the product. And even if they churn, like within 3 or 4 months, the very most important thing for you as a founder at first is to talk to those early customers that sign up and uncover their real pain points and needs. And if they churn later on, no worries, you've learned what they actually need. And then you start building and building and building, and then you can launch. And fun fact, you can relaunch your product every 3 to 4 months. Nobody cares. If you launch today, you can launch in 3 months again. There's a whole new audience that will discover you.
Yeah. I remember somebody said you have to launch on Product Hunt. Well, maybe back when Product Hunt was cool, but every 3 months. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You can just hype it up as many times as you need, getting more and more eyeballs and validating pretty much every idea and every feature you're adding there. But since you started kind of adding a little pieces about AI to this, I'm wondering, because, you know, your story has always been solo founder, bootstrap, lean teams. So moving on from just being a solo founder with a very small team to solo founder with a small team and AI, how much better, let's say, has your life become since you started leveraging it?
Yeah, so I leverage AI directly and indirectly. So I'm not a coder and I'm not a vibe coder. I don't want to learn to code. And maybe I'm a bit ignorant on that level, but I just want to pay a dev that is good, has his expertise, and build the product for me and build it out with new features. And I just want to focus on what my time deserves and what I think I should be doing for the business, and also what I love doing for the business. That's just one thing I think is very important. Not everyone has the luxury, of course, when they're just starting out. And maybe some people need to vibe code. And with AI, it's just much easier to ramp up a basic MVP in a product. And maybe they enjoy vibe coding as well, right? But I'm just not a coder and I don't aspire to be one. But I leverage AI for vibe marketing. So I build all of these custom GPTs, like a custom GPT founder, co-founder, because I don't have a co-founder and I can just brainstorm with it. What are the next steps to take, for example? And it's pretty, pretty good when you just brainstorm with a custom GPT. For all of my products, so for Upvoty, I have an Upvoty AI custom GPT. I just give it my website, I just give it my competitors, and I just ask, what are the next steps to take, or how would you optimize my landing page? That makes my life so much easier because those tasks are in my scope of doing the marketing side of the businesses. But with the help of AI now, it's just so much easier. And yeah, we leverage tools. So you mentioned Copy Paste Lab in the beginning of this podcast. And the reason I started Copy Paste Lab, which is like the mother company right now for Upvoty, but also a lot of other products that are coming. I've recently launched Kajabo, and Rank Desk is coming, which is an internal tool we've built for leveraging AI for your blog posts. So it automatically generates AI-written blog posts in a very humanized way. And we actually use it on Upvoty and our other apps and sites. And it generates these blog posts and automatically scales us in Google, but also in LLMs, which is working great. So I'm leveraging AI not directly for product and tech, but more on the marketing side of the business.
That's very interesting. And to be completely honest, I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday that I recorded a podcast with another founder who was the first person to say on the podcast, go and do it. Go and use AI to write your blog posts. Don't worry about, you know, rewriting or whatever. Just make sure you build a really good prompt, make sure you optimize it, make sure you tell it basically where you want to rank and how you want to rank and, you know, the tone of voice and yada, yada, yada. And I was like, okay, well, that's like literally the first time I see a founder of a very successful product tell me, yes, do it. You know, fuck it. We don't know what's going to happen. But for now, this is a loophole to rank well, to rank high, and to be on top of mind of your potential customers. Do it. So that's basically what you're doing as well.
Yeah. And think about it. AI, when you have a good prompt, of course, that's very important because you don't want to have these AI written blog posts that, you know, also when a human reads those AI written blog posts, it's just, you can immediately spot it's written by AI. You don't want that, right? So the prompt is very important. But think about it. AI can analyze your website. It can analyze your competitors. It can analyze the market. It can analyze your internal pages, and it knows best what keywords to use, what internal links your blog post needs, what external links it needs. It's just so much better and so much efficient and so much quicker in ramping up those blog posts that at the very first and most important thing, help your readers of your blog do a better job, right? Inform them, educate them. And if you can nail that part of using and leveraging AI for your blog, you will win in Google as well, and you will win in LLMs, and it will just compound.
Yeah, any tools you could recommend? What helps you the most?
Yeah, so for me, we build an internal tool. Yeah, so shameless blog, RankDesk, rankdesk.com, launches next month to the public. That is just a tool to automatically generate those blog posts that we are doing right now internally for Upvoty. And yeah, honestly, the one I'm using the most is ChatGPT and building custom GPTs. And just feed them all of your data, all of your... So one thing we did with Upvoty AI, as I call it, the custom GPT we build in ChatGPT, I just feed them my website, my competitors, but also like the chat history of our Crisp chat messenger, where we communicate with customers. The whole history, I exported it and imported it into Upvoty. And I just asked it, what help articles do we need to write next? Or what are the most common problems our customers face that we need to fix and nail? And because it has this database of all that data that you have as well, but you can't, you know, comprehend, you can just ask it to design the next steps, to design your roadmap, to help you make a better product and do better at customer support, marketing, etc. It's amazing what you can do with just a ChatGPT subscription, which is $20 or $30 a month. So yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. Any concerns? I'm always curious how people think about ChatGPT and all other AI-driven tools or AI-powered tools. Like, any concerns? And like, okay, basically now it knows everything about Upvoty, everything you're doing, everything you're planning to do. Any second guessing when you're doing
that? Well, no. No, I don't really have those, but maybe I'm ignorant on that level, but I have AI installed on my phone, on my laptop. I use AI all the time to, you know, voice my thoughts, etc. Of course, AI has a level of, you know, carefulness that we need to take care of, like visually, like video generation, etc. I see some pretty scary things happening there, and I hope we can find something for that specifically. But for me, as you know, sharing my data with AI, man, I'm sharing my data on internet very transparently for 10 years already. So I don't think I have any secrets on that level. And AI can help me to accelerate and to grow. So yeah, I just leverage it, and maybe I will regret it one day. But yeah, I'm just not the type of person that sees those problems. I just think in opportunities by default. So
Yeah. No, hopefully not. I mean, I'm always kind of not, I'm not as careful with the ChatGPT either. Also, I feel like we always say ChatGPT. It's like Pampers for diapers. It's so weird. But yeah, it's just out of curiosity, like, what happens if it's all gone? I don't know. Just
that will be a very strange world if ChatGPT stopped working. And we're only at the beginning.
Yeah.
But even now, today, if it stopped working, some people will have a problem.
That's true. Yeah. Do you sometimes get into this rabbit hole of, okay, so now what do I do? Do I just wait for you to do this? Can you do it faster? when it's just a couple of years before that you had to like write your copy and, you know, think about your own blog posts and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, I have one advantage, and that is I just love to create. So for example, for my personal content on LinkedIn, X, etc., I just love to create content. I consume podcasts, YouTube videos, etc., and I, you know, recreate my own ideas based on that. And I want to create content around it and share it with the world. And I do leverage AI on that level, but I always create the first thought and concept first. And I do want to keep that doing, because otherwise I will lose my creative side of me. And I don't want to lose it. And I think it's too fun to create. So yeah, I tend to leverage AI on the business levels where it takes just too much of my time and I don't really enjoy those tasks. Then I'm leveraging AI. I'm perfectly fine with that. But on the side of really creating value and doing things that I love, I don't really want to use AI. Maybe at the max, it's Whisper AI Flow. It's an app I really love. It's just talking to this app, which is a voice to text AI, and it just automatically formats my thoughts, et cetera, which is very helpful. It's also nowadays how I write emails. Just say it to Whisper AI Flow and it automatically formats a beautiful crafted email and I just hit send. But those are my thoughts. It's not that I ask AI, hey, come up with a smart email or something like that. I'm not really into that.
We all started there. Write me a beautiful blog post or you know, tell me what business I should build. Anyway, so I think, you know, the whole narrative of you, at least in my eyes on LinkedIn, is a solo founder, basically running multiple businesses on your own. Yeah, what would be your advice if, you know, somebody wanted to do that? How to make sure that you navigate it in a you know, healthy, proactive way and not lose yourself?
Yeah, it's very important to find fellow solopreneurs around you. So I've joined communities, I've started my own community, and we are able to brainstorm about those things. That is on the level to not feeling lonely, because it can be lonely sometimes, I'm not gonna lie. But that's pretty doable to just join communities and you know, connect with fellow founders. But on the level of scaling, it can be a trap as well to think you can do everything on your own. Like you're Superman, right? Have that ass on your chest. But the truth is, you can't do it alone. So when I'm saying I'm a solopreneur, I mean, I just run the business from here solely, but I do have a team around me, like freelancers, contractors, etc. And one of the things that helped me the most, because solopreneurs and entrepreneurs in general tend to be very careful with outsourcing their tasks, right? They think they can do it better or just more safe to do it ourselves, right? But one thing I learned was, and I actually learned it from Dan Martell, it's the camcorder method, which means you just open up a Loom, you just record yourself doing the actual task, and then you send that Loom to one of your contractors, like a VA, and have them watch the Loom and write an SOP based on that Loom. You go over to the SOP and you let them do the task. And one thing I noticed is that over time, they not only do the tasks as good as you, but they do it better because they have more input from their own experiences. So you can actually optimize your own processes doing that. And I would highly recommend to have at least a couple of people around you. So in my case, I have to have developers, right? Because I'm not a coder. So I have a development team, but also I have VAs that help me with admin related stuff, or like, for example, podcast outreach. I have one person that does podcast outreach for me, and they're very good at their job. I can spend my time doing the things that are actually leveraging and growing the business, and that's what I love doing, which is very important. If you want to endure the what I call the startup roller coaster, you have to focus on the things you love doing and are best at. And yeah. Crafting a team around you is one of the things and most important things as a solopreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. I can totally back you up on that video thing. I was looking for an assistant and it took me three people to finally find the one. But while I was doing it, I was always creating videos and more videos, like, because some things are just repeatable. And now at the moment, like when I found the person who's actually doing it right, they just got this library of videos and they said it was so easy to just go and see how you're doing it, because some of the, like, I described some of the tools there that I use as well and they've never used before. So it's just easy to basically go step by step and then navigate whatever you need to navigate.
Yeah,
how perfect. How do you hire? Is there like, because you said you have contractors, freelancers, VAs, do they come and go whenever you kind of need, whenever there is capacity and you have to find new people from time to time? Or do you kind of have a pool of vetted people who already know what you've been doing and you go back to the same ones? What's the hiring process?
I prefer to have the same team around me, but sometimes they move on or it's just not a match in the long term. So sometimes you have to hire new people. My two hacks for hiring people, the first one is through your network. So just yesterday, I received a LinkedIn DM from someone looking for a developer. And I just referenced my developer that I'm working with currently. And that's just the best way because you know they're vetted, they know they're good, but you don't always have the luxury. So second option is to go to, I like to go to Upwork, filter on reviews on my preferred native language because I want to communicate clearly. And I'm always filtering on higher pricing. So, you know, we all know filtering on lower pricing sounds good, but it never works in the long run. So just filter on higher pricing, good reviews, your preferred language, and ask them to create a Loom. Tell them a little bit about themselves, how they look at your product, what would they do to optimize your product is always a good thing. Because in the end, they're just a developer, like you decide what features to build. But having a developer that thinks with you on the product side of the business is very valuable. So I always like to let them record a Loom. And then if I like the Loom, we hop on a call and the call is just for vibe checking. Even though I'm not hiring for here in the office, like physical hires or hiring them for a full-time job, I think it's always very important to have that vibe because you're going to work together. And even though someone can be very good at that work, if you don't have the vibe, it's just not going to work long-term. So I'm very lucky. I have a pool of contractors around me that I love working with. I've been working with them for years. But if you need new people, and I actually need some new people right now because as part of the copy-paste lab studio, we are going to launch multiple products. So I told you before, Rangdesk is the upcoming product, but we have more that we want to launch at the beginning of next year. And so I need more capacity. And then Upwork, filtering on reviews, et cetera, is a very good way to find new contractors.
Okay. And copy-paste lab is basically... I'm just taking the the description from LinkedIn. It says it's the product that you develop or you buy, and then you kind of apply the same playbook that already worked for you. So what's the strategy about buying the products?
Asking yeah, you for said a friend, it perfectly.
Are you a competitor?
Yeah. So the copy paste lab, the name says it all. Copy paste. So what we do is we copy paste the boilerplate of the tech. And nowadays with AI, you know, my developers are vibe coding as well. They're very good at coding, but they're vibe coding as well to speed up the process. We just copy paste the boilerplates of their tech. We change the features. So the tech is relatively easy to build and we can ship pretty fast. But also copy paste is the marketing playbooks. So we, in my Notion, I literally have a copy paste template. I copy paste to a new product. And there's the roadmap, you know, submit the URL to all of these directories to have backlinks. All of these little tasks that you often forget about are listed there. And I just have to go one by one. And, you know, the launch plan and the roadmap is already designed in advance with the copy-paste framework. And on top of that, we have our own products and we also acquire or join existing products. So once a month, on average, I have a conversation with a founder that is just looking to collaborate, and we can speed up the process for them tech wise but also marketing wise by applying those copy paste lab templates, and which is very interesting. We now joined two apps and we're looking to join more, but on top of that we love building our own apps as well. So the copy paste lab studio is very broad in terms of launching and shipping apps.
Okay, so you're going a little bit back to that agency mode as well.
Yeah, you can see it like that. Yeah.
Okay, that's very interesting. All right, so just a couple more questions. The usuals that I ask here is, you know, with all the products that you've launched, what has been the biggest win and the biggest failure? And it can be, you know, your business, or it can be something for you personally.
So the biggest win and failure, right?
Yeah.
So the biggest failure at the start was thinking we had to conquer the whole market we saw in front of us, mainly by looking at our competitors, right? Seeing all of these customers joining our competitors, thinking we have to launch for all of those competitors and go after them, which is a very big failure if you're just starting out, because your competitors are years in advance and they also started somewhere very small to a small target audience. So the biggest win, on the other hand, so that was the biggest failure, but the biggest win was when we noticed that and we scaled back to one small target audience and started there. Talking to, for example, product managers in a specific niche and make Upvoted work for them, and then slowly build and scale to different niches, a broader audience, et cetera, worked very, very well. And one thing you can do you have to study your competitors. I always say study your competitors like a freak, because they are years in advance. They have experienced things you have to experience. And you can see by looking at their website or their copy, their articles, listening to podcasts from their founders, you can really design shortcuts because you can learn from those lessons. And one hack we applied was to use like this website, like Internet Archive, and just look at the competitor's side from a couple of years ago when they were starting out. And it's very interesting because they have a different copy. And you can see that they started out with this very small target audience as well. And so don't get blinded by how they are looking right now today. Go back a couple of steps and start with a small target audience and nail it for them first.
Okay, awesome. That's a great advice. What about a win?
Yeah, so the failure was to have this broad audience, but the win was to narrow it down to target audience. I would say that was the biggest win, because when you nail that, your copy gets better, because your copy gets easier as well, because you know exactly, we just have to nail it for that small target audience, right? And so all of your copy from your ads, from your landing pages, from your articles, from your everything, social media, it becomes very easy. So yeah, the biggest win was to narrow down our target audience.
Okay. And I mean, you already shared a hack as well, but maybe there is something else, you know, a hack that works for you and you think would help other founders, maybe to navigate as a solopreneur, maybe, you know, hiring, anything that works for you and you think others could benefit from.
Yeah. So I think I have two very uncommon, because you often hear the same hacks, right? So let's think a little bit out of the box. This one is mainly for starters, right? If you start out, we all have heard of the phrase, do things that don't scale, and especially applies to when you're just starting out. What I did was I emailed every single customer that signed up for a product, and I tried to uncover their needs and pain points, which really helped us to develop the product in a better way. And you form those relationships. And like I said, one of those first customers is still a customer today. And he often just emails me like, hey, Mike, how's it going at Upvoted? Any new interesting things? And he's really become an ambassador for us as well in his community and for his customers. So forming those relationships by just sending a personalized email is very valuable at the start. Another interesting hack that comes to mind is infiltrating Slack communities, which is a fun one. So what you can do, you can join all of these Slack communities and you can set notification alerts in Slack, and you just give in your own brand name, you submit your competitors, you submit some keywords around your expertise or what your product is all about. So in our case, I have user feedback, customer feedback, et cetera. And every week I get a couple of notifications from messages within those Slack communities from people that are looking for an alternative or are just generally asking, what are you guys using for collecting user feedback? And I can just jump on those conversations and say, hey, I'm the founder of Upvoted. Maybe that could help you. But in general, just help them and voice your expertise and help them accomplish the job is a really cool thing to not hard sell your product, but mention your product and get them on board.
So while thousands and thousands of marketers went to Reddit to bomb every conversation with their product mention, you went to Slack.
Yeah, and also Reddit is a good one. And there are a couple of products that are monitoring keywords, like brand keywords, et cetera, right now. So that's a good thing as well. A couple of months ago, I got a DM from a founder that built a tool, Jungler. Jungler AI is the name of the tool. It was a very good cold DM because he said, hey, we're building this tool to monitor LinkedIn keywords, like brand keywords or keywords related to your niche. And actually this post, and he linked to a post from a founder on LinkedIn, is now asking for a user feedback tool. And I jumped on that conversation on LinkedIn, and it was actually the founder of a pretty big company, R2B2. Sure, you're familiar with that company. Adam Robinson is the founder.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I jumped on the conversation and they became a customer. So jumping on conversations is literally one of the best hacks I've applied.
Yeah. Yeah. That totally works. And I mean, Reddit is not bad either. We use Sifton to make sure we know when somebody's talking about us or, you know, anything that we're interested in. But like I said, it's sometimes you go there and it's just marketer after marketer after marketer, just telling them, okay, this is our feature and this is our feature and this is how we're better. And you're like, oh God, this is not, I mean, obviously you're also there to tell them you have the best feature or tool, but it's just so funny to see that everyone else is doing it. So it's not, doesn't qualify as a hack anymore. Unfortunately, not a loophole.
No, not on Reddit anymore. So Slack could be very fun for people that are watching or listening.
That's a cool one. Yeah, we're going to try that one next. But thank you so much for mentioning this and all the insights that you've shared. Like I said, we've been trying to do this for a while, and I'm really happy that you finally had the time. So thanks so much. And, you know, looking forward to what you're doing with Copy Paste Labs. And hopefully we do this again sometime when you guys grow and have a portfolio of your own.
Yeah, that would be fun. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Thank you, Mike. And take care.
Thank you. Take care.